Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Day for many different reasons, but we want to be getting into the topic tonight of racism and white supremacy in particular. Some of the items that we want to address are black people or people classified as black mistreating each other, and is this mistreatment caused by racism and white supremacy? How can we work toward preventing this? What kind of recommendations are there to improve interactions with each other? And also, perhaps we can run a clip at some point, if we're able to get that infused into this broadcast, we can discuss some solutions that have been offered by people who have already written books or have given lectures on the topic, individuals such as Dr. Francis Cress Wilson or Mr. Millie Fullerton. And their particular ideologies on how to mitigate the mistreatment amongst people classified as black. Also, how does the area of war, speaking on the nine areas of people activity, and how racism, white supremacy works within those nine areas to subjugate people classified as black. But how does war impact how we act, people classified as black, and respond to each other? Do words actually hurt? Now, these are a lot of different questions that we pose, and it's generally our format to do so. In a second here, or in a few minutes, we'll be joined by my co-host, Brother DC, as well as Paradox, has some matters to attend to prior to the show. Anyone wanting to call in with questions, comments, you can call us at 1-866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. And you would have to hit *6 and 1, I believe, to raise your hand and be heard. Now, with that being said and that out of the way, we can sort of get into the topic at hand. We know that we look at media in general, and that could be social media to what has been dubbed the mainstream media, we see that there's a lot of mistreatment, a lot of name-calling amongst people classified as black, a lot of name-calling. There are quite a few different terminologies or terms that have been bandied about, and they become sort of a cliche type of conversation. So some of the words would be coon or bed wench or Negro bed wench. So those seem to be the two hot, quote unquote, hot ones right now. But we have to realize how easy it is for victims of racism, white supremacy, to name call each other. And honestly, does name calling, does that lead to any type of solution? Does it solve anything? Does it actually strike at the root of the issue, the larger picture at hand? Obviously, no one's perfect, but I think if we can find a way to codify ourselves in a way to minimize conflict, it could go a long way, perhaps starting a different conversation outside of name calling that would lead to empowerment and actually changing the way that we interact with one another within this oppressive system of racism, white supremacy. There, as far as name calling goes, okay, because we'll get into that a little bit more, most of the time it just devolves into more name calling, different type of terms thrown around, and it becomes an argument. And the thing about name calling is it actually, ironically, it can feel good to call someone classified as black, just as you are, a name, because it actually allows you to kind of escape your reality and put the blame on someone who is not directly responsible for your situation, your community's situation, or their situation. Most of our folks, whether we want to believe it or not, are just trying to survive within the system. And people have different ways to go about doing so. So for someone to name call or get into an argument with another, as Mr. Fuller put it, get into an argument with someone who is at the bottom of the slave ship just as they are, is absurd. Two slaves at the bottom of the slave ship arguing about whose chain, which is ostensibly around their neck, their feet, their hands, whose chain is actually longer. Whose chain is actually shinier. And so, if we can do that, I think that's it's not easy because, I mean, it's something that we're taught from an early age. Name calling has actually become like a rite of passage when you're younger as a defensive mechanism. Someone calls you a name or calls your mama this or that, then you respond in kind. And so we've had lots of practice in doing so. But I think we should get out of those modes of thinking and actually talk about the system as a whole. Obviously, there are, like I said, people who are what you might consider compromised. They have certain leanings within the system. But everyone is participating within this oppressive system, whether you want to believe it or not. I mean, you have to go to the grocery stores. You have to go to the gas stations. You have to use banks. Obviously, you don't have to do a lot of these things, but it obviously makes life a lot more harder if you don't. For example, just try having a child without getting a birth certificate. You might not be able to leave the hospital, or not as easily as you would like to, because the system is predicated on tracking everything. And the social security number and the name are the key points in tying those together. Or if you take a more regular route and say, well, I don't want to support the system in terms of patronizing grocery stores. I want to live off the land. I want to grow my own sustenance. You know, there are GMOs in the store. The food prices are rising. Food is not quality. It's making us sick. So I want to go and buy some land, grow my own crops, that you could do that. And depending on what climate you're in, or within, you know, what where you are geographically within the what's been called the continental United States, that could be easier or harder for some folks. Even still, most of us are not acclimated or accustomed to that type of lifestyle, because we're used to the convenience of just simply going to the grocery store and picking up whatever we need at our leisure. But when you actually have to grow your own crops, for instance, or raise your own livestock, there's no safety net. Everything depends on you. If something goes wrong, it could cost you your life, possibly. And so that's a prime example of how a lot of conveniences and benefits are put into the system, or placed within the system, to essentially put people in a position where they will capitulate. And so those might be more extreme examples as far as the hospital and the birth certificate, as well as living off the land. But I say that to say that even with individuals who have other means in which they correspond within the system and try to get by, there are ways to actually consider those viewpoints and see why or how it is this person came to arrive at this particular spot, and how it is that they're actually being attacked by people who are also classified as black, and how easy that is, and how easy that's become. Because there's been a lot of, for those that follow what I would call entertainment consciousness, there's a lot of mistreatment going on within that community. And to be honest, and this may sound foolish, but a lot of it is actually quite entertaining. But at the end of the day, I hate to use that cliche, but what you'll find is that it really does not solve anything, because we're not actually talking about solutions on how to end the system of racism and white supremacy and actually replace it with a system of justice, something that's never been, as far as we know, as far as anyone that I've talked to, never been tried or effectively tried or actually been brought into fruition on this planet. As far as the systems that we have in place, they're nothing new. They're very ancient. From a lot of the laws that we have, the codified laws that we have on the books, have been passed down from parts of what they call Africa now, or ancient Greece, ancient Rome, and also the banking system. A lot of the actual Magna Carta, which is based on a feudal system, feudal medieval system, was actually brought here by the Europeans. And so what you have nowadays is modern day feudalism, serfdom. So again, those are two examples, but when you examine those systems, you have to examine how each individual falls within the systems and how they interact with one another. In other words, because those people will say, well, there's no mistreatment going on within the system. You know, people are just doing for self, and they're trying to succeed and get ahead. And like I said earlier, you have all the creature comforts you can need. You can go to the grocery store, you can go to the mall, you can pretty much buy whatever it is you want or need, as long as you have the economic means to do so. But the fact of the matter is, everyone operates differently within the system. So even inside of economics, the play there is going to be different one to another. The way a so-called white person used economically is going to be completely different from how a so-called black person views economics. It's been my experience that so-called white people view economics, money, currency, as a form of stored labor. And so by saving up the currency, when the time comes, they can actually tap into that stored labor and dispense it as they need. Whereas, for the most part, and this is again in my experience, and if anyone disagrees or has a different viewpoint on it, they can obviously call in and share their thoughts on it. But it's been my view that, for the most part, that people classified as black have been kept out of the actual means of, or what it means to practice economics, and that when they do, it is actually to fulfill whatever needs they have without actually planning for a rainy day, as they say. So there are many ways, I think, that or solutions that can be offered, and a lot have already been proffered by many different authors and lecturers, like I said, to solve the system. I think what we can do, though, is to delve more into what they've already offered and try to practice that. So I think a good idea would actually would be to maybe do some type of what we call a compendium. So you would combine all the different techniques that we know of, that our elders have shared with us, and others that are more prominent, and combine them into one book. Obviously a lot of things that come into play, like copyright law, things of that nature, but I think it could be possible, and it would be sort of like the Holy Grail / the Bible of how we conduct ourselves, people classified as black. Another thing I think that could be done, and I know that what I'm saying is not 100%, I mean, it's not always going to fit everybody's scenario. But one thing that I've been doing a lot lately is just simply being quiet and observing how people classified as white operate. Just watch them. Watch how they, because actions speak louder than words, that's true. You know, listen to what they say, and take note, whether that's mentally or actually writing something down. And then just compare that against how their actions, do they fall in line with that or do they not? You see, because we don't, as so-called black people, don't think we spend enough time observing what so-called white people do. They definitely watch us all the time. It's interesting because I was listening to I believe it was a podcast, and this gentleman was talking about how, and I give this an example to kind of back up what I'm saying, but this particular individual, he was talking about the Henry Louis, I believe it's Dr. Henry Louis Gates, and the situation which led to the beer summit. We talked about that a number of times on this show, but anyway, the situation that was a precursor to that was he lived in an affluent neighborhood. I can't remember offhand where exactly, but he was locked out of his house. Yeah, Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. And so he essentially was trying to break into his own house. If you can even do that. And I'm sure a lot of us have been in that situation before, whether it's the house or our actual cars. And one of his neighbors, white neighbors, classified as white, called the police. And so this guy on the podcast is talking about how He said, you know, white people were always watching, and they were essentially just waiting for him to slip up. Because you got to think about it. I mean, this guy, he's probably been a resident in that neighborhood for quite some time. He probably knows, he's probably on a cordial and a friendly footing with all the neighbors there. And so it's interesting that they may claim that they didn't recognize this man. And so this guy on the podcast was saying, well, they were pretty much, the neighbors were waiting for the opportunity to to get him or to bring the system down on him. And I think he's right to a degree. You know, the guy on the podcast alluded to how the fact how they knew when he was leaving his house to go to work. They probably knew when he was coming back. When he went to the grocery store, you know, they saw him unloading groceries. When he was doing yard work, or when he had someone come to his house, or someone leave the house. And so what we have to realize is someone's always watching. And so I think we should try to be more cognizant of that fact and pay more attention to our surroundings. Because the fact of the matter is, we live in a war zone, and war is not always overt. In fact, some of the best wars, some of the best coups and overthrows were staged and done and carried out in secrecy. And so that's difficult for someone to do, myself included, to pay attention to your surroundings. You know, even when you're in the car driving home, you know, are you being followed? How often do you check your rear view mirror? And especially at night, are those the same headlights behind you? You know, we haven't been trained to look for those type of things. You know, we usually were in the car, we're listening to music, we're talking on the phone. Well, we're talking to someone that's a passenger in our car. Which, if that's the case, if you have someone else in the car, you consider that your comrade, and that's just an extra set of eyes. But these are things that we have to consider, that we have to get out of the modus operandi of thinking that we're in a time of peace. Because while there aren't any bombs dropping, or bullets flying to the degree that there are mass casualties, we're not going to understand that war is not always overt. And so I think that's also the study of war is very important, because the people that we are, I'm sorry, Brother Scotty, I think we have DC on the line. I don't know if he is having technical difficulties.
No, I've been here. I've been on the line. Yeah. So, yeah, man, I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, like to say welcome everyone. T, thanks for holding down the fort for me in Paradox. You did a wonderful job. But I have a quick question for you, and just want to kind of keep it in the vein of the same vein that you was in. So when you was listening to the podcast that you were listening to, is it hosted by a black person?
Correct.
So I would assume a black male or black female?
Black male. Yes.
Okay. So. What was their analysis of the information, or how did they react when they basically you know, submitted the clip that was in question?
Right.
Like, what was their synopsis of it?
Right. Well, I think that what I will say to that, or what was said in other respect, kind of goes to an entertainment aspect, because it was almost in passing in a comedic type of vein.
Yeah, so, yeah, I got you. So we're back to like kind of like borderline name calling and kind of making fun of people's reactions to the system again, right?
Making fun of victims, correct?
Yeah. So, and I guess what our biggest concern was just for the audience, and the reason why we thought it would be very, very important to do a program about mistreatment and victims that do do social commentary, and you know they base it off an entertainment model. And let me just ask: do the person that do the podcast, do they benefit from their program, you think, in any kind of monetary way, or is this like their career, or is this just like maybe like a hobby or something that they just do on the side? Not to say that there's anything against it, but I'm just saying, like,
right? No.
Is the entertainment aspect? Do you think the entertainment aspect has something to do with, you know, trying to garner views and then trying to capitalize on that aspect of it?
I'm not even sure that. Well, to say that the individual they are into comedy.
Gotcha. But
I think the way it was said was just like a casual conversation. In other words, it was like kind of just talking to somebody real casually on the street or outside of the job.
Now we do know that there are victims of racism that clearly benefit from this model of entertainment, doing podcasts, creating an environment where they are antagonizing other victims of racism that have a contrary response to what they are responding to within the system. Would you agree with that? So, you know, something very interesting, because I was watching a program too, video of someone that does commentary, but I don't think this victim gets paid for it. But whether you do or not, it's not really my point, or not really our point of this program. But they was calling it the Coon Wars. And the reason why that's funny is because coon is a perspective. There's no facts into that description of anybody. It's just like any other name calling. I mean, when you call somebody by a different name than what they want to be called, then it's all just conceptual at that point. It's just from what your point of view is. And us doing this program, I'm pretty sure that we would be called coons too. Pacifist coons, sellouts, no good. I mean, there's all kinds of names. What's some other names that we could think of where,
bootlicking Negro?
Bootlicking. You know, you don't want to do nothing. You're sorry. You're no good for nothing. I mean, nobody does it better than we do, because nobody has been as victimized as we've been victimized. So now we have made it an art form. Some people call it the dozen. Some people call it scoring on each other. Some people call it basically joning. I mean, you know, like what we call it. We have created an art of mistreating each other. And now, you know, we can go from jokes now, and this can go to jokes to getting serious real quick. You know, whether it's family members or anybody else, somebody may take a slight to what you may say, and you know, it can trigger something real fast, real quick. And then, you know, you jive beefing. You know, y'all going at it. You know, whether you talking about fisticuffs or two automatic gunplay. Hence the reason why we're vulnerable in this sense to the name calling aspect, which is another form of mistreatment. But my problem with the whole deal of mistreating other victims, and whether you're trying to capitalize through economics or whatever the case may be, is that it's always generated by something that cannot be actually proven. So, you know, we make a lot of assumptions that, you know, you hear things like, well, if black people, and they already had articles that have debunked this, but this is stuff that's basically said, if Negroes didn't buy sneakers, didn't spend money on alcohol, you know, don't do any of this, don't do any of that, the don'ts. This is the reason why you are in the position that you're in. And I would contend, this is just DC talking, I would contend that no, that's not the reason why you're in the position that you're in. The reason that you're in the position that you're in is because there has been a group that has classified themselves as white, a minority group that has inflicted power against those they classify as not white. So what does that mean? When you have control of all areas of people's activity, labor, law, entertainment, education, I mean, you're talking about controlling those areas and defining those areas. So things become defined, which basically implements culture. Our culture, people that is, I call it being forced into the classification of black, but we are black people because we have been forced to be black. Our group, in particular, have developed a consciousness based off not being able to dominate other groups of people except for our own, which means that we mistreat each other on a massive level. That's why we say things like, no other group does things like we do. What other group you know that sit up here and demean and talk bad about each other? The reason why that is something that is done is because you can make profit off of it. And I'm pretty sure if it was profitable for other groups and they was mistreated to the level that we were mistreated, then they would have more victims of, in that category that are not white that would do it too. And it would be something that is rampant and it would become part of their culture. But the reason why it's part of our culture is because mistreatment has been a very, very real part of it. I mean, you have books like Medical Apartheid. You have books like The Delectable Negro, Shout Out to Cows, Gus T. Renegade. You have Neely Fuller basically analyzing the system. You have Mr. Reed creating a program on Black Talk Radio, trying to give independent news and give an independent view about what this system has basically done to us. So there are outlets out there that go into full detail about some of the actual mistreatment that has happened to us. However, we are stuck in a cycle of basically mistreating each other, and mistreating each other does garner profit. And in the system of racism, white supremacy, that is basically SOP, standard operating procedure. We would like to basically kind of offer a couple of suggestions on ways, if you are really about trying to help black people. One of the first things that I would tell anyone, and this is something that's free of charge, no money, no nothing, but it's the hardest thing to do, even for us on this program. Stop name calling. T, how many times have you heard somebody name call somebody today? Just off some random. Just give me radio, casual conversations, family members, your spouse, your lover, your friend, whatever. Everybody has some kind of form of name calling where it's even just part of just casual conversation.
Correct. Yeah. Something that's interesting, I was doing a little entomological research on the word coon. Obviously, I mean, I'm sure most people realize it originates as derivative of the word raccoon. But as far as the insult there, if you insulting term for a black person, coon, it was in use by 1837, said to be ultimately from Portuguese barracos, which means building constructed to hold slaves for sale. It was no doubt boosted by the enormously popular Blackface Minstrel Act entitled Zip Cohn. Zip Cohn. Z as in zebra, I, P as in Paul Cohn. A gentleman who played that role was went by the name of George Washington Dixon. And it debuted in in New York City in 1834. But it is perhaps older. One of the lead characters in the 1767 colonial comic opera The Disappointment is a black man named Raccoon.
Wow. Wow. So just hold on to what you got right there. But you know, we have Mr. Reed online. Mr. Reed, would you like to share your comment about the name calling aspect?
Yes, thanks. As y'all might presume, I listen to a lot of talk radio, especially black radio. So I was listening to this radio program that's heard on this platform and on this station. And I would just start thinking about name calling, because the program they were doing, it's always a panel of people who live in that local area, are so-called, quote-unquote, professionals, you know, have some credentials or whatnot. And so they're brought in, various people from that community, onto this radio program that's broadcasting on the station, a terrestrial station there, as well as online. And that's how we carry it. Most people have described to me, I'm not going to say a lot of people, but maybe five people over the years have told me they couldn't listen to this program because of cooning, you know, saying stuff like that. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know. And so I'm listening to this program, and there's this guy. If people say that program or that is cooning, then he will be the chief coon. Okay, now this is what other people have said to me, and so I do not name call. So I don't say that to them when I call in and what have you. I don't name call, and I actually called into that program to try to get them to stop name calling, but they were name calling the black people who met with Donald Trump. And right. I'm saying, but I was thinking to myself, I didn't say this on air, but I was thinking to myself, man, how dare you be on here calling people a coon when, you know, depending upon the person's perspective, they viewing you the same way. So absolutely. Then I was thinking, a coon is a matter of perspective, so we shouldn't be name calling, because you calling somebody something and then there's somebody over there who say you fit the definition. So where does that get us? It doesn't get us anywhere but a emotion over name calling and being disrespectful. That's ultimately what it is. I think you can critique a person without being disrespectful. So I just thought it was ironic that this person who holds certain views that he will be on the opposite end of my views, but to hear him call somebody else that name, it just really disgusts me that day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. And yeah, if you want to cue back in, just let me know. But just, you said something very, very interesting, and I hope that
seems like we're having some audio issues, DC.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
Are you muted?
Nope. I'm. I should.
I can hear you, DC.
You can hear me, Mr. Reed? Yeah. Can you hear me? Hello. Well, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully. You know, I hope that I can still be heard. If not, then, you know, hopefully we get the technical difficulties corrected. But just to kind of piggyback on to what Mr. Reed was saying, and I think it's very, very important. I hope that, you know, anybody that is co-host on the Black Talk Radio platform, if you are really about the business and of helping black people, one of the quickest ways to start up a conflict with anyone that has a divergent view than you do is to call them any kind of name because they have an adjacent view. It's something that I have seen happen way too often, and you know, T, you can stop me if I'm wrong. We're just not in a position to declare whose solution is best. I mean, at this present time, we haven't solved, and when I say we, victims of racism that's classified as black, have not solved the race problem. Not even close. I mean, if you want to look at the numbers, if you want to look at the statistics, it says a very clear thing. Now, you can go into name calling and say that, you know, this is because there are black people that don't deserve to be on this planet anymore. They are holding us back. But here's the thing about that. White people deal in the collective. They have proven this. Hence the reason why we're classified the way we are. And we don't share the same commonalities as can be seen with the conflict that we have within this system. You got people from the Caribbean. They have a different view. They was in slavery too. But we talk about the Caribbean like they basically have a, you know, organic culture. Like, like they didn't have slavery to deal with. And I'm talking about Caribbean. When I mean Caribbean, I'm talking about people from Barbados, Trinidad, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Haiti, and the other various islands that are west and not east on the North American so-called continent and South American continent, as we know today. You have groups of people that basically get into these cliques about what to do and how to solve the system. And it just becomes very interesting to me that a lot of our solutions sound like what white people have done. But here's the thing. If you're going to do what white people have done already to establish themselves in the system, then it goes back to what you was talking about earlier, T, about studying warfare. And I would always tell people, there was no negotiation when, you know, the European came over here, as far as like, you know, hey, natives on this particular landmass, we're going to take your land and we're going to negotiate with you on this space. No. There are groups of people that said, no, you know, you can be here for whatever amount of time, but, you know, we have ways that we do things. If you want to share the land, you can share it. But, you know, we can't ask you to leave. You're here now. But, you know, nobody owns the land. The land belongs to everyone. You can just find a space and join the customs. If you want to do your own thing, then you'll be the tribe of whatever people. You know, you'll call yourselves that, but nobody's trying to dominate anybody, not as far as that kind of thing is concerned. Well, white people changed the whole paradigm. We're going to come here. We're going to dominate you. You're going to move, regardless of what you feel. If it needs to be a fight, there's going to be a fight. We're going to call it laws. We're going to make it seem legal. We're going to put on suits. We're going to join the court. And then we're going to enact our laws. It's almost like black people actually think they can stop gentrification. I made a statement to someone. And, you know, T, you know this. D.C. is going through gentrification. There's nothing we can do to stop it. I made a statement. It is a absolute fact that the black people here cannot stop gentrification. There are a variety of reasons why. But one of them is these things are basically planned 20 years in advance. 20. The only way you can project that far out is to dominate people. Bottom line, you create catastrophes in neighborhoods. You create a system where people will actually naturally move. You create an environment, and people know what I'm talking about. You would create an environment where people will shift automatically if they can leave. You don't have to ask them to leave because the neighborhood is so-called become too inhabitable. So black people don't want to stay there anyway. So guess what? Bottom out, tear down the actual live in them areas, the people that do remain, you ask them nicely, we'll buy you out at a certain price. They say no, they can stay for another year or two, but once those bulldozers come, guess what? They're going to have to move too, because ain't nobody left on their block to hold up. This is what we see happen, and it's just not here. This happens nationwide. I mean, I'm just interested in this whole thinking about this. Like, it's baffling to me. And I don't know if it's because of the area we stay in that we see things move. People don't understand that the black people used to stay in Northwest D.C., you know, the Shaw area. Then they moved to the more rural area, the southeast area of D.C., across the bridge and Acacia. Now, basically, we're pushed out to the boundary where people would think PG is the hood.
PG is the hood now.
Capitol Heights, District Heights, Landover. I mean, everybody who's listening to this call that stay in the DMV knows what I'm talking about. It's just a fact. People naturally moved based off the conditions that they were in. Them niggas out there around so-and-so crazy. They up around the Ville, they acting crazy. Around Trinidad, they acting a foolish. I can't be around them. You don't have to move. We're going to move on our own because it's too unsafe. Our kids don't need to go to school there. So naturally, you got people moving. So what they'll do, they'll put on a nice little apartment. You go down to Anacostia now. They're already starting to move in. You got, like, you know, a couple of white people there. You know, maybe from Minnesota, maybe from North Dakota. Hell, I don't know where they from. But they move down there to get a nice little house, to get a nice little whatever check or whatever. Then all of a sudden, you know, they start renovating the area. Now people getting priced out. Now you can't stay around because you can't afford it. But it's not about, oh, well, you know, we could just buy, if you got black people that got money, we could just buy a certain area. It's, these things are basically being forecasted ahead of time. T, let me ask you something. Where is the largest concentration of wealth of black professionals in the United States per view?
Entertainers and athletes.
No, I'm saying, like, what area in particular?
Oh, whatever.
Has. Huh?
PG County, Prince George's County, Maryland, right, has the right highest per capita, right, African American population,
right,
as far as income in the nation.
And we're being gentrified. Just for black people that's on this program, think about that. But no, I do think it's important though, because you know, I want to, into the second hour, I want to kind of get into some of how the entertainment, how basically, you know, we in entertainment, we have become so focused on critiquing entertainers now and holding them to some kind of standard, when we know for them to be in the bowels of white supremacy, these people are doing jobs just like us. We are doing jobs. Their business code of conduct is not to upset the apple cart, or you will get Nick Cannon. I mean, Nick Cannon, for instance, have gotten in trouble lately for expressing his views on racism, white supremacy. Shout out to Nick Cannon, by the way. He's a victim of racism. I know that he was, you know, speaking freely on different platforms and through his music and making comments, and you know, somebody tapped on him. Hey, man, you know, you on you on TV, right? You know people watch you all the time, right? You know, you need to take a chill pill. You can talk, but, you know, keep it under perspective. That's just me basically kind of playing the advocate. I don't know, but, you know, just listening to some of the stuff that he has said, he's alluded to that he was pulled up and somebody basically had a conversation with him about some of his dealings outside of, you know, what is it, America's Favorite, what was the program? Do you know the program that he was hosting?
Yeah, the
most America's Most Talented or something.
Hoffman. Yeah, America's Got Talent.
Yeah. Oh, America Got Talent. That's right. It's NBC, right? It's an NBC production, right?
One of those NBC, ABC.
Yeah, large networks. Basically, yeah. He's hired by white people. Very powerful white people, by the way. And I'm pretty sure they like Nick Cannon. Probably like Nick Clinton a whole lot. He probably made them a whole rack of money, you know. But you know, people get into your other dealings, and then they say, "Well, shoot, that's bad for business." It's okay, you can share some of your views, but kind of tone it down a little bit. You ain't broke like these people no more. What you care about that? That shouldn't be your concern. You can speak it. You can speak about it in a more you know, overall view. But when he gets to speaking about the system, and I think he made a mockery of. He did white face instead of black face, what normally white people do. And man, they lost their poop. They went crazy on this man, you know. So reverse called him racist, reverse racist, and all kinds of craziness. So the backlash was very, very swift. And see, that can give you an idea of how this system works. There are different rules, different standards, different points of stimuli, different rules to be basically abided by. Everything is okay as long as victims are basically mistreating or talking bad or ill against their own. But anytime, and you can see it on YouTube, you can see it on these different Facebook platforms, Twitter, whatever the case may be, but anytime that you go adjacent to that, then you get outside the purview and you start looking at the system, you start to be a little bit more critical. And man, don't get the name calling or talking bad about somebody that's white that cares about that. Then you would see the punishment going to play. So anyway, thank you for joining. We are the Code Breakers. We're going to go ahead and go on to the break. And under the next hour, we'll get into a little bit more deeper discussion about mistreatment black folks, and see if we can come up with some suggestions on how not to mistreat anyone within the system. So see you around on the next on when we get back. We'll be back. Thanks for listening to Code Breakers.
Podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. This is Chi. I have DC on the line as well. And we are discussing, can people classified as black, can they mistreat each other under the system of racism, white supremacy? DC, I had a question for you.
Yes, sir.
As it relates to interactions with other victims.
Uh-huh.
Before I do that, I do want to give out the call-in number once more, 1-866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056, I believe *6 on 1 will get you on the line to pose your question or make a comment. DC, with respect to interacting with other victims,
yep.
there are a lot of people classified as black who have a lot of great solutions.
Yes, sir.
But within that, they mix in name calling or other forms of what I would consider comedic overtone.
Mm-hmm.
So how does one, in other words, if you and this particular individual, you have kind of like divergent viewpoints on the solution, which happens all the time, obviously.
All the time. Correct.
How does, if that person considers you to be a coon or
mm-hmm.
some other type of disparaging word,
yeah,
but you want to open a dialogue with that person, give me an example. How does one go about about doing so? Because obviously, if you both have good solutions, how can you come together to try to work around the foolish argument?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would do is let that person know, wholeheartedly that my disagreement with them would never entail me calling them a name based off the disagreement that I have with them. We may have divergent views, but if you are clearly about the best or the benefit for the group that's been classified as black, then we can't differ that much. We may differ about what the solutions are. So just to answer your questions directly, I will let them know I'm not your enemy. I'm not a person that's basically going to do something to you based off having a different viewpoint about the system. I agree with Mr. Fuller's suggestion about victims guaranteed qualifications, which he has shortened up and called VGQ. They said what they said. I do think that name calling does hamper communication between victims. It's just been proven too many times. The evidence is just too much evidence of it. Just like Mr. Reed has already stated so eloquently earlier, is that you can get on a program and literally you can begin talking about solutions to the so-called racism problem or the black problem or really trying to help black people, but it can delve into name calling so fast and so rapidly that the program would just be about talking about other victims and their reactions to racism. And you will veer right off of whatever the so-called solution is because it feels so good to talk about other black people. It does. It does. I mean, I have done it. You know, I'm a victim of it too. Right. And I have to catch myself, because it's not the right thing because I disagree. No matter how insane I think, somebody's viewpoint is, they have to be able to share it. But I would just basically just keep it on the idea. You can still, like Mr. Reeder said, you can still disagree wholeheartedly with someone's idea of something without attacking the person. And that's where we need to, in my honest opinion, develop the art of basically being able to disagree with someone's idea without the name calling. But it's so hard to do.
And it is an art, that's for sure. And I think, and that's good, I think another question that we should ask ourselves, are people who are classified as black taught to be, from birth, overly emotional? And if so, what kind of part does that play in trying to have a constructive dialogue with one another? Because I oftentimes encounter this within myself sometimes, and I've tried to work as best I can to eliminate some of those aspects from my personality as best I can. But, mm-hmm. In having conversation with someone, I mean, they can simply raise their voice or, say, what are you not listening? You didn't hear what I just said?
Are you stupid?
Right. I mean, it's funny, but it's not. It's something as simple as that.
Exactly.
And so you're completely off of topic. It can your breath starts getting shorter. You can feel hate rising up.
Oh man!
You start perspiring. You start stuttering. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have to ask ourselves that question. I mean, have we been bred to be overly emotional? And if so, are we taking steps to proactively scrub that from our personality and become more logical?
So I love that analysis, and I would look at it this way. I think that emotion comes from powerlessness because you can't change the situation, not the kind of way that you want to change it because you need help changing it. So when you need help changing it, you doing it on your own won't be enough. So whatever your solution is, and however you're reacting, you want to get other people to react exactly like you, right? But if they don't react exactly like you, and they have some kind of variation or disagreement with what you're doing, or maybe want to get some clarification, you are so bent on trying to focus on doing one particular thing, right? And whatever your analysis is, that if there's any pushback on that, then here comes the name calling, like you said, the elevated speech, because now we're reacting. Like I said, gentrification is not something that is done. You know, they don't think about that 2016, 2017, 2010. That's something that basically was thought out in 1997, 1995. I mean, at the advent of the crack era, you know, towards the end of the crack era, how can we get people to move back into the cities? What you call that, urban renewal, what was it used to be called when we was younger? Yeah, that's not something that you just think about, you know, willy-nilly. So us reacting to gentrification right now is, in my opinion, is too late, because the bulldozers are here. The cranes are in the sky. Like, shout out to Solange Knowles with her classic A Seat at the Table. But yeah, cranes is like cranes in the sky, you know. Once you see them cranes up in the sky, it's a wrap. You know what I'm saying? Like, what you gonna do? Protest the cranes being up in your neighborhood? I'm not trying, but I mean, we don't want to sound, T, and this is another thing that happens too. You know this, T, when we have these kind of discussions, and I can already hear, well, shoot, I mean, well, hell, if y'all believe there ain't no hope for black people, then what should we be doing? And I already made a suggestion, and it's not hard. It's free of charge. It don't got no money, but it's the hardest thing to do. Stop name calling. Dr. Wilson, she was so peaceful, so patient. No matter how crazy the question was, no matter how, you know, whatever, you could just, I used to just be like, what? Did you just ask Dr. Welsing that question? Like, who? What's wrong with you, man? Slim. Yeah. Who is this dude? You know, like, you could just see it even when you're in the presence of her, and just when you're dealing with people that are naturally sick, what would she would normally say, black people do not qualify for mental health. And when you look at it from that standpoint, you understand where we're at as a group, then you understand that the person that is speaking, they may have been muted for so long that when they do get to speak, they're just going to speak basically off what they have experienced and what they think the next solution is. But I'm just following what she basically said and how she basically had patience. I saw the model. I used to be in the presence of it right in front of my face. I never seen her raise her voice. I never seen her basically disparage anyone, talk bad about anyone, do any name calling to nobody white either, because it's not about that. Very clear, very concise, and very, very thought-provoking on speaking on the system of racism, white supremacy. But, you know, I would suggest for those of us that are more animated, group of us that have taken in, you know, her views, and you know, we remix it like a Sunday preacher that remixed the Bible or remixed Jesus teaches. Like, you know, like, how can you go but that's a whole nother thing. I'm not gonna get on that. But how can you go from something that's clearly stated? They have made a point of saying no name calling, but then use, you know, someone's words to name call someone else. And at the end of it, you know, you're quoting Dr. Wells, and then to say coon at the end of it is just, it's just disrespectful to her, as what she was basically here for, mental health. She was a mental spiritualist. Like she was basically concerned with the spiritual mental well-being of black people. Period. That was her concern. She loved us in spite of ourselves. And it's just the fact that you could still name call by basically invoking Dr. Welsing, Mr. Fuller, Dr. Ben, John Henry Clark. I hear it all the time. They use these people as weapons. They use these sayings and things of that nature, and they remix it. And I'm like, well, Dr. Welsing wasn't on that.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. you know how many hours of lectures I've watched? You see, and then that's how it kind of gets off track. But I've never, it's interesting you mentioned that, DC, because unfortunately, I did not have the pleasure or the opportunity to meet Dr. Welsing in person. I know you and Paradox have, but based on what I've seen from her, just in her lectures, she had a very enterprising spirit that was very motherly, very receptive.
Exactly.
Almost to the point of disbelief. And so to be able to model yourself after that, I think would be admirable. And the example is there. You just have to try it. I mean, as far as name calling and trying to avoid conflicts and get into constructive conversation, I don't think that has really been tried on a large scale basis by victims.
It has not. I could tell you. I could tell you this. Like, you know, anytime that you listen, it's like we give ourselves permission based off whatever clique we fall in or whatever ideology we fall into. We give ourselves permission to just go ham on everybody else. I mean, just if you are into, I don't want nobody to think that I'm, if you into black empowerment, economics, right? If you have someone to say, well, I don't think that economics is a solution, I think that racism basically is the primary problem, what do you think the person is going to call you that's in the black economics and empowerment in their eyes? When there's no such thing. But what would they say? Oh, you're a coon then. You're a bootlicking Negro.
Possibly,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you have a group of victims now where there can't even be a peaceful discourse because you have labeled and eliminated someone that can possibly, because like I said, if there's any kind of model that's going to come up that's going to be beneficial for black people, you know, and I don't tell people that I interact with, you know, whether I'm interacting on the internet or speaking in person, that, you know, I am on a, you know, black platform, and you know, I am basically supporting what you're stating, but you know, I don't agree with the full dogma of going so hard at people and name calling folks, especially the ones that are the most vulnerable of our group, and disparaging them, trying to guilt trip them into basically supporting whatever venue that you're in. If people support you, then they support you. There's no need for name calling. Whatever your idea is, that should be enough. To me, you don't have to shame black folks into supporting you. Doesn't make sense to me. But that's my, you know what I'm saying? You know, and I don't begrudge anybody basically having a different view. But I wish we did have callers, because I would really like to hear the reason why people that name call other victims of racism, how they think that that's actually constructive. Like, I really would like to hear how they think that that will benefit our group that's been marginalized already, that is hurting already, that is how you already brought it up. We're already emotional, right? So we're already reacting to stimuli at a heightened level, right? How do we think that is actually beneficial to name call each other? Like, how is that beneficial? How is that not mistreatment? I'm just curious.
Well, just to play, I'll play devil's advocate here.
Go ahead.
My only, I guess, if you want to call it a saving grace for individuals who do want to participate in name calling. That's probably not a good way to put it, but they may look at that particular usage of words as a tool, as a labeling tool to out people, or so-called, you know, how like, I know we've kind of talked about this, how President Trump they've coined it, I don't know if him or his camp or whoever, but they've coined the term extreme vetting. And so maybe it's a form of extreme vetting for certain individuals within the so-called black community to say, hey, well, this person is not operating in a manner that is going to be empowering to our people. That's the only thing that I could think of. But even in that in itself, I mean, it does have entertainment value. A lot of the words that are thrown around can be entertaining.
It is.
But does it actually address the system to a larger extent, or are we just keeping the ball within the court? In other words, are we not going outside the painted lines and seeing the people who are spectating? Because it is a spectator sport, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Are we looking at the spectators and seeing what their agenda is? Why are they in the stands watching us play this game between ourselves that is a zero-sum game? That no one's gonna win.
And you know, my only problem with that is that if whatever you're saying or whatever you're disparaging another victim of racism is about, just understand that whatever you think the solution is, or whatever you think the ideology is that victims of racism should follow, there should also be an understanding that the ideology that we have now is based off racism, white supremacy, however you want to basically, you know, stamp that. There's no going back. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle. It is what it is. So we talk English. We speak English. Most of us have been basically are connected through slavery, through the western part of the world. So I'm not saying anything that is beyond your understanding. So when I say that, trying to establish a dominance over your group because I have heard this, to compete. Now, you said that Trump basically called it vetting, right? Extreme vetting, which is cutthroat in a sense, where, you know, you don't come to par. He's a very unrefined person.
Radicalized.
So he believes in the violent part of white supremacy, whether it's through language, whether it's between he just let go of his national security advisor like it was nothing. Hey, you gotta go. You know, I gotta let you go. Period. There's no gonna be no waiting. There's not other. You call it. You. It's the cost of business. He's a CEO. I mean, CEOs are ruthless by design. They are psychopaths. I mean, there was an article written, I think it was like 2013, 2012. I think you showed it to me, where the CEOs, when they did their personality profile on people that own businesses that are the most successful, they're psychopaths. They're clearly people that don't have a problem dissociating themselves from the human experience. So what I'm saying is, think about that when people think that name calling works against other people, when you say that you're vetting someone. See what I'm saying? The psychosis of that. Because at the end of the day, are we trying to end the system, or are we trying to basically build the system up so we can mistreat also? Are we trying to mistreat other people? And then if that is the case, what make you think that when you become a threat to white people that you're going to be able to mistreat them? Because that's the only way you gain in this equation. Or you're going to mistreat your own people, like the Koreans do, like the so-called Chinese do, like the so-called, you know, Vietnamese do. White people have gave them space to practice economics, and what do they do? What do they do, T? They exploit what? They exploit their own group. That's the model. Very few of them benefit. You exploit the so-called minus people of those, and then you basically put them to work, and you treat them accordingly. But you want to maximize profit. Capitalism, that's the model. The model is to get the most for the less, for as less as you can make it. You cut costs. You cut costs to benefit yourself. And the ones that are benefiting are the ones that's on top. The ones that make the decisions. Hence the reason why people that are CEOs are cutthroat. People that are generals are cutthroat. We had a program about military strategist Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam conflict and World War II.
Right.
You're talking about somebody that had to, and you could look at that as the same as cutting jobs. You know, it's not my problem that these people are going to be homeless, or these people, they can't make it. Enron.
If I just mentioned that, DC, if I had to interject about the CEO and the psychopathic mentality, because this was some years ago, I was talking to someone at one of my former plantation jobs, and I went in their office and they were talking to me, and somehow we got on the topic of some of the tough decisions that he had to make. And he said, because I asked him, how do you bring it upon yourself to fire people? And some of these people actually were not in a position, at least performance wise, or it's not like they weren't doing what was asked of them, or even exceeding what was asked of them. But he said, people fire themselves. That's what he told me. He said, we don't fire people. People fire their own selves. And so I just the one to relay the message and carry out the order. So I think that is a shining example, if you want to call it that, of the type of mentality that you have to have in order to sit at the helm of abuse, essentially. Go ahead.
No, you're right on track. I want to kind of vet this out, because this gets down to the mistreatment. When people say mistreatment, and when Mr. Fuller's talking about justice, I don't understand how you can be in the same vein with the name-calling thing. That's all I'm saying. That's my point. Mistreating someone based off whatever model you have because you want to take advantage. So now you're hustling. I know a hustle when I see one. I can feel a hustle a mile away. I'm pretty good that way with that. That stuff don't move me. I guess I would say that I'm a natural skeptic, but not in the sense of where I will be basically disrespectful, but it just doesn't, I don't see that as being a viable solution. So what you're saying is just, you're trying to hustle people now. And when you're trying to hustle people, especially people that are desperate, you understand what I'm saying? People that don't have hope in a lot of instances, and that is our people that is in the classification of being black, because we are the poorest people here and abroad globally, that when you dealing with a situation like that and people feel like you have the answers because you have been propped up Abbott within the system, I think we have done well by not using names, because names are not necessary. There are plenty of people that follow this model. But at the end of the day, just look at the needle. That's all you need to do. And look at the means that they're using to tell you what you need to do to benefit you as a black person, where your labor was basically exploited to create this system. The system was created off our exploitation. You don't have this without free labor. You know, you can go back however you want to go back. It doesn't exist. Because guess what? Poor people would have fought for this. If you had poor white people, right? If it was truly a class thing, and you had poor white people, poor black people, that had similarities and viewed the working rich class, not working rich class, but the oligarchs, the top 1%, they call it the top 1%, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, people like Trump, they're the minority, right? If you take the veil of whiteness away, he will be killed. And I don't mean that to put a threat on anybody's life, because that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that based off history, based off the model of basically exploiting people through economic means, and you're dealing with the same group of people, it's a hard model to uphold. You have to import your services for the most part, or you have to follow a model of a more dominant group. Hence the reason why basically Asia and all these other places basically got infiltrated and followed the model of the European. But best believe their system is still under the system of racism, white supremacy. They're still being basically compromised by the group that classify themselves as white. But if they ever decide to do their own thing, then it will basically be, it will be Iran, it will be Iraq, it will be Syria, it will be these places where basically you'd be anti-culture, you'd be anti-West, you'll be someone that don't so-called believe in democracy, because you don't believe in practicing what we have practiced so long. So now we have the right to kill you, because you seem so out of line to everybody else that does things on the planet the way we do. Now make that make sense. You see what I'm saying? Because our group don't believe in doing things your way, so we're going to just go over here and we're going to just live our own life, so you know, we don't care what y'all are doing over there. No, but you have to do what we do. You have to. That's the way the planet needs to go, because we can't have nobody basically coming up and going to be basically threatening us at any kind of time. We have to eliminate you. And so to me, when I think about mistreatment, I think about what it leads to. People that get mistreated, they tend to want to lash back out. And being that we basically have been limited to our group, that's the reason why I think that black people have so many conflicts with each other. It's because we have been basically confined to areas where we're staying around each other. We're not infiltrated in other communities, so to speak. We're basically always kept or herded in certain areas where we basically take our frustration out on ourselves.
Yeah. White supremacy cannot exist in a vacuum. It has to have a supporting system. And that supporting system is the subjugated people, which are obviously those classified as black. So, and I've alluded to this in other shows, but the whiteness has to mean something, as Paradox would always say. And it goes back to what can't think of the brother, James Baldwin. James Baldwin wrote an essay about how, I can't remember the particular name of the essay, but he mentioned how white people are not quite sure they're white, and he also mentions how in basically he said, you know, white people lost the ability to define themselves when they went and defined someone else. Now, someone else being so-called black people, because mm-hmm. whiteness is defined within blackness.
Absolutely.
It's a strange dichotomy, but it has to have its base in the subjugation of other people. And so what type of identity does that forge? I mean, obviously it's a very warlike society that we live in, and we could probably touch back on the war aspect a little bit, because I think that's very key and very interesting. What kind of society does that create? Because what would happen if I can't think of the poem that was written, but it talks about how you probably know it, DC, but it talks about how when all the white people went to work the next day, all the black people were gone and they didn't know what to do. You remember that poem?
Where the next day,
yeah, they had happened. They had their mammies, you know, breastfeeding their children. They had the janitors, people doing a lot of the menial tasks in this town. And then all of a sudden, when they woke up, the white people woke up the next day. They were looking for these black people, and they couldn't find them, and they were very discombobulated as a result. Can't think of the name of the poem, but if I find it, I'll mention it on another show. But it kind of speaks to what I'm saying about white supremacy not being able to exist in a vacuum.
Agreed.
I'll have to find out.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly which poem, but there's so many great examples that was left by our relatives, our forebears, our ancestors that came before us that basically shed light on this thing that we call racism, white supremacy, as the system, and how confusing and how basically this has been created. And James Baldwin, Richard Wright, Ralph Ellison, Phyllis Wheatley, Alice Walker. I mean, there are so many of these, you know, these literary giants that have shared their views about the system and how basically it works. And you know, the funny thing about James Baldwin is that he was conflicted a lot when he spoke, and he spoke very, very honestly. You know, like I would tend to think that, you know, well, I would I'm not going to say that, but I really do appreciate his honesty when it came down to the system about how conflicting it is. You know, how he felt like he was an American, but then he understood the duplicitous nature of that because of how the system worked, how we would have a difficulty trying to separate from white people when, if you are a part of this particular country or landmass for any amount of time and you always been here, you know that you basically are part of this particular group that classify themselves as white, but they still exclude you. So that is some of the critical analysis that he would actually go into. And now, you know, shout out to James Baldwin. I mean, there's a documentary about him right now. I think they're showing it at Landmark Theater in D.C. off East Street, where it's called I Am Not Your Negro. And I think one of his favorite novels, he wrote very short stories and short novels, but one of my favorites is The Fire Next Time. Incredible book. Incredible book, man. It is not that long, but you know, just some of the things and thoughts that he had. And I think he wrote another, and I think this is part of the essay you're speaking about, where he wrote an essay to his nephew, his young nephew, which I would imagine is a full which probably be somebody that's old enough to be our parents. So yeah, it's you know, very, very, very critical analysis of how the system of racism, white supremacy has basically shown itself to be. I do see that we do have a caller from Macon, Georgia, and I do just see that Paradox just joined the line, so just hold up for a moment, Paradox. But if the caller from Macon wants to, well, just before we get you queued up, we have a break, so I guess we'll get everybody online to share their thoughts. So let's go ahead and get into the break, and thanks for listening to the Code Breakers, and we'll be right back.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right, thank you for returning and listening to the Code Breakers. So as I was stating, we do have a caller from Macon, Georgia. If you would like to speak, you can unmute your line.
It'd be what, star 6 and 1?
Oh yeah, star 6 and 1. If you want to have you want to share any of your views or any comments or any disagreements that you may have had with with some of the things that we have shared during this program. Oh, no star, just six and one.
Actually, it's star.
Oh, star. My bad. I'm sorry. I thought it was no star. Just press star if you want to share your views. So if you're just listening, then that's fine also. Paradox, thanks for joining the program, good sir. We've been going at full tilt here now. So if you want to go ahead, are you somewhere where you can share a little bit of your views? Or you
yeah, still... can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
I know it's not a lot of background noise.
No, you good
not
to go.
Not too bad.
Yeah, you good to go.
Okay, what's going on?
What's going on, man? So we're talking about mistreatment. So we kind of like went into, you know, the name calling aspect, and you know, touched on war a little bit. You know, we delved in a little bit on that. So if you want to kind of like share your views on, what is your viewpoint on mistreatment? Do you think that it's something that is needed, that black people need to be able to chastise each other out in public to get us in line to act right? T did share that view.
Yeah, I was thinking. I don't know if you touched on dealing with. As far as what I consider mistreatment, which is people taking advantage of the poorest people or people who are the most vulnerable. So it may not be linked to economics, but it is linked to someone's mind, and they may be poor in the mind, in a sense, to take a church term that I've heard before. But I think, did y'all touch on that at all?
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit, but go ahead. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to say on that part, but I just wanted to, you know, put it out there that, you know, one thing that we have to do, I think, is to ensure that if we're pushing an idea, or if we are, you know, trying to feed our families or trying to survive, in a sense, you know, I definitely think people should do their best not to try to take advantage, you know, of people who are the most vulnerable, people who really don't, you know, who are not necessarily trying to figure out what's going on, but trying to survive. And, you know, you got people who say some slick stuff or some charismatic things or even try to create some form of so-called consciousness. And, you know, they end up, you know, really just trying to sell something. So, you know, just kind of around that mindset, I think a lot of times that people who are struggling. And I'm going to tell you, when you don't have any money, and the reason why I'm going to use money as an example, I think, is because I feel like we've grown up as capitalists. And that's all we really, not everybody clearly, but that's all I know, you know, from birth. It's all about, you know, trying to get money, trying to do something. So it's interesting that when you're vulnerable, when you are struggling, when you don't have finance, you do feel the pressure. You do feel the weight of this country. And if you hear anything that sounds like hope, if you hear anything that you think sounds like you can get a nickel from it, you know, you're willing to listen. And unfortunately, we got black people specifically, but all types of people who take advantage, who come up with these concepts, these ideas, in my position, that exploits. That's the position I'm taking. They're exploiting people. They're taking advantage of people. And unfortunately, to the people that they're taking advantage of, it may even make them feel good. It may even make them be able to get through their day. But you're taking advantage. Now, would I have to say that you're just as bad as some other group of people? I don't know. You know, but I do think that's something that we should definitely get under, you know, get more, you know, point those things out. You know, we see people, specifically black people, you know, on the internet, you know, at a church, a mosque, I really don't care where it's at. You know, they're telling people stuff or trying to hustle, sell people. I'm talking about the poor people. Man, if you know better and you want to play these games and give people everything that you have and you don't have nothing, and they selling you dreams, and that's on you. But for the people who really don't know, for the people who are listening to this program, how they're struggling trying to make it, you know, we can't, you know, we have, I put it like, we have a responsibility to a degree, you know, everybody, to a degree, that if you cannot be hustling or offering things to people that you know is not going to really solve this problem. You know, we all, I know the two of you on this call definitely know that we've seen that in certain environments where you got people who, you know, oh, I'll put it this way, let me not even go down there, bro, I'll put it this way, you know, just try to avoid, you know, targeting people that you know you're taking advantage of. You know, that's the biggest thing, is that the people who are doing a lot of this stuff, they're targeting certain groups. You know, they're going into certain neighborhoods, they're going to certain areas, knowing that people don't have hope, and they're using it to eat. So I'm going to leave that there, but I don't want to go, you know, go too preachy on the call when it comes to that. But I hate that for a lot of us to survive, we have to devour our own people. Because one thing we do know is that, well, I'll put it this way, if you do want to mistreat someone, go find some white folks to mistreat. Go to where they are and hustle them. Sell them some stuff, some books, or some stones, or whatever you think you need to sell them, you know, to get money. And that's what you got to do. Now, I understand it. You do what you got to do. But, you know, I definitely want to stand on not targeting the most vulnerable. And and I do think that the people who are the most vulnerable, they're not aware of that. You know, they're not aware that they're being lied to. And unfortunately, in this type of system that is heavily, heavily based off of capitalism, we are tied to money. You know, we're intertwined with money.
Right.
So when you don't have it, you're willing you're willing to do anything. Not everybody, but many of us. And I feel like, especially in the days of YouTube and in the days of internet radio and in the days of, you know, people have access to so much media, mm-hmm. and they're vulnerable, you know. They're sitting around, don't have anything to do. They're looking for anything. You know, the churches may not be helping you like they used to, and people, you know, can exploit those positions. I'll leave that there, though.
Man, you came with some serious heat, dropping bombs, man. I wish I had a DJ Clue dropping bombs all the time. I guess you just had it all pent up, man. That's some good analysis.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but, I'm trying not to go in. I'm not trying to be anti-black.
Don't be anti-black, brother. Please, please don't do that, sir.
Right, but at the same time, see, the thing is that when you study a little bit of economics, you start, if you just, not even economics, you know, I've dealt with marketing environments. And when you market to people, go ahead.
Hey, just hold on for a quick second. I want to at least give. I think we have a caller online. I think they have unmuted, and I would like for them to share their views. So just hold tight with what you got to say. And hello, caller.
Hello.
478. Yes. Hello. How you doing?
Hi. Good evening. Hopefully you're all doing well. I think it's a great show. At first, when I read the title, I was like, duh, of course they are. But I understand you have to make this clear to other people who don't listen all the time, who may be new. So I got over that. I do think the one thing I agree with, but one thing I do disagree with is, you know, we don't want to call the people out. I think you have to. And I'm not saying you go online, you know, they have a YouTube broadcast, and then you go back and go, well, Billie Jean said blah, blah, blah. You don't have to do that. But, you know, just ask, you may, if you are listening to their website or whatever, or you have to ask them, how is this being constructive? How is this helping black people? If they don't have a good answer, you just have to cut them off. You don't have to be mean about it, nasty about it. But some people, for whatever reason, especially I think more so in the entertainment, you know, oh, I'm earning all this money, and I may earn all this money that I give back to black charities. I mean, that sounds cute, but you don't have to beat up black people then to turn around and give back to black people. That doesn't make sense to me. So you have to make them aware, because sometimes they may not be aware. Sometimes they may be, sometimes they may not, even if they are making a lot of money or whatever. Because I don't care if you're making a lot or a little bit, a lot of people who are classified as black are confused.
Absolutely.
And you just have to let them know, like, you know, do you see, you know, give them a chance or two, you know, see what's going on, what's in their mind. And if they're dead set on what they're doing, then that's what you do. Like, I'm going to do it. There's this lady, most people know her, Wendy Williams. Her job is gossip. That's what she does. She talks. That's her job. She's not ashamed of it. I was born and raised in New York. I was born and raised in New York, so I used to listen to her on the radio. That's what she did. I was grateful the songs were great, because even as a little kid, she wasn't my favorite for that reason. I'm like, I don't need to know about these people like this. I just want to hear my songs. Yeah. That's what she does. She's not ashamed of it. It is not constructive. It is not constructive. And yeah, she make cute little clothes on Home Shopping Network. I could buy your clothes on there. Yay, make clothes. But no, I mean, it's just not constructive. I don't think she doesn't pretend that it's constructive. You know, she just doesn't. And
well, I think can I just interject, and I want to keep you right here, because thank you first of all for sharing your analysis of that. But Wendy Williams, I think what we're talking about are like people that are so called speaking about what black people should be doing, and then going to name calling. I think Wendy Williams had made it clear that, you know, I'm doing this over here and my whole thing is to entertain, you know, white folk, black folk, Asian folk. I just happen to be a black person basically doing whatever I can to make a decent living. So even though I do understand that what Wendy Williams is doing is basically totally contrary to, you know, helping black people, I think that she has made a decision, a conscious decision in a sense, where she don't believe in that whole aspect of what we're talking about, in a sense. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Sort of like she don't really care about, you know, black issues, so-called black issues. She doesn't look at it in that sense. Or maybe she do, but she think that her success is basically helping black people overall, which is, it doesn't, but she feels that what I'm doing is helping black people. What you're doing is just profiting online and stuff like that. So just to kind of put that out there. But go ahead.
I mean, with the premise is the same. What you're doing, you can talk about the setting of it. What you're doing is, you know, I know there are other people. I'm not going to bring them up. Because, like I said, she's the only one who's, you know, that's what she does. I don't know what the other people think they're doing, so I don't want to talk about them because I don't really know them. Gotcha. But you do get to the point where, I guess, me personally, you know, you decide, you have to make a decision. And it may be slow because you love to, well, I don't really love to hear the gossip like that. But, you know, people love to hear that or whatever. Because even if you do it in that area, maybe it could translate to the other areas, back to the mistreating. And then I did have one question. Do you think it happens more so when there's an opportunity, I guess, to showcase? Because where I work around a lot of white people. There are not a lot of black people. Not that I was doing this when I worked with not a lot of black people in general. But, you know, we don't do that. Like, every professional job I've had with black people, we did not talk about other black people in a bad way. Like, this, like, when I hear and see people say this all the time, I don't know who these people are. Is this, especially the showcase in front of white people, I mean, maybe I've just lived a different life. You know, this has not necessarily been my setting. I'm not saying I haven't been around black people that haven't talked bad about other black people, but it wasn't like the showcase in front of white people. It was like in the moment, and if it got too much for me, I would be like, well, can we move on to something else? And usually it was in church, so in church I would just bring out a scripture, and they'd be like, okay, you're right, and they move on.
That's a great tactic. I do. This is paradox. I do appreciate workplace racism, a little bit of workplace racism. Shout out to Gusty Renegade. She did go to the job with it. Just wanted to say that.
Oh yeah, well that was like I said, at work I don't do that. I've worked around a lot of black people. My first job out of college, worked around a lot of black people. We got along well. That, again, the separate was ultra corporate, where they had a lot of diversity organizations, so maybe everybody knew, don't act crazy, you know. But there was, every group had its own little group at the job, women's group, disability group, everybody had a group. So we didn't have, I didn't see, I'm not saying they didn't exist, but I did not have those particular problems.
You mean as far as, just to make sure I understand, you mean as far as other black people that you work with talking about each other?
I don't recall a lot of that. Like I said, I also didn't try to get involved in a lot of gossip. So, like I said, maybe it did happen, but you know, I just kind of walked away or whatever, so I missed it.
I think, at least in my experience, because I kind of experienced both sides of the spectrum in terms of working with majority white people and majority non-white people. And I think out of the sake of scarcity and the fact that, you know, if there's only a few so-called black people in the office, it's an interesting thing that should be studied, because they tend to unify more so than a mass of black people, because I've been in offices where it's mostly black people and you have all types of division. So that's interesting within itself.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that the viewpoint that I'm speaking from is from basically working with a lot of black people. I would say like in middle management. So with that, of course, comes a lot of interaction, whether you're trying to mind your own business or not. Sometimes name calling. It's not even, you know, it's so prevalent. I think that a lot of times it feels normal to us because we're just so used to it. Let me ask you this. Do you think that it's beneficial or Do you think is a useful tactic to admonish black people that are so-called acting in a way that's hurting other black people by calling them, you know, like say like a word like coon or, you know, I'm not going to use that term, but say like just coon. That's a popular word now. We have basically picked that word back up from the 20s. Oh man, so to speak. And now this word has become popular in 2017 again. It hasn't went anywhere, but now it's basically everywhere. People just calling each other jigaboon and coon and all that. Do you think that that's a useful term? I know you hear people speaking about it on the internet. I know that, but do you think that is useful?
No, I mean, I don't. Like I said, it's not useful to me. And growing up around a bunch of black people, we had squabbles, whatever. But I mean, we didn't call each other stuff like that. I have a pretty decent, I guess, relationship with my family. I can't think of anybody that I don't like. Maybe some I'm not close to because, you know, distance and age or whatever. But, you know, I don't, all my, at least my family, you know, they're all positive in terms of that aspect. And so, yeah, I don't, and like you said, I hear it a lot on the internet and stuff, but I don't know. It doesn't seem helpful. And I just know as a person who was definitely more negative than I am now, you know, work real hard to be positive. It's very tiring. I just don't have the energy. It's a whole lot easier to be positive. It just seems better. I don't know. Better for me, healthier. You don't have that unnecessary stress. Because you don't think of, I know we just talked about the name calling part, but the health, like you said, not only the mental health, I think that can get into you physically and stress out your organs and stuff. And then you can't be that surprised when you get sick. Some of that is stress.
It's toxic. Yeah. Yeah, it's toxic to the body. Fellas, any of you guys got, go ahead.
That's what Billy Fuller talks about. We're full of poison. And you can feel it. You know, you walking down the street and another black person coming towards you, and you can feel the poison rising. You know, we definitely are people who are under attack constantly, whether directly or indirectly, and for someone who, and even at times myself, is not conscious of certain attacks, it can play out subconsciously and manifest physically. And then you say, you might say, why the hell did I do that? If you go back and examine it, and it could be something as small as something that happened on the job, and it may have pissed you off, and you were just acting out. So it definitely requires, I think, a large degree of self-examination and trying to understand patterns and where they could potentially, or triggers especially, and where they could potentially lead in terms of pitfalls.
Paradox, do you have anything else you want to add? Or,
well, you know, I don't want to, I know we only got a few minutes left. I didn't want to, I'll probably be like another hour.
Well, we've been on this whole time, so we'll let you go ahead and close us on out. So whatever you want to share, you came in dropping lows. So I'd like to shout out to the caller. Thanks for sharing your views. We appreciate you listening to us here at the Code Breakers. Please call in anytime. Please feel free to call in and share your views at any time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now go ahead, Paradise. What's going on?
We got about 5 minutes left.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what I was saying was just from a marketing perspective, I feel like we've just been trained, you know, from very early on to buy, you know, to sell, typical stuff. I'm not saying anything big, but, you know, it feels like, and again, I could be wrong, but, you know, we've been trained to buy and sell to each other. That's kind of all we know how to do. And unfortunately, I feel like the way things are set up, it is to exploit the ignorant. You know, it is to exploit people with less information. And I feel like there are black people and people who, you know, consider themselves aware. You know, people who consider themselves conscious or consider themselves, you know, they're kind of in the mix as far as trying to improve lives, but at the same time, taking advantage. And I know people talk about that all the time. I know it gets called out all the time. It's just something that I wanted to put out there because I know the focus is on our focus tonight, I think, is on mistreatment. And so, you know, from Mr. Fuller's perspective, you know, he obviously lays it out pretty clear about, you know, how you treat people or how we should treat people, or even from his perspective of, you know, unless you're doing something constructive, you probably shouldn't be, you know, around each other. You know, I battle with Mr. Fuller and his logic, you know, all the time. So I do think in some respect that's true, but not sure about all the times. But anyway, I'm always, you know, DC, I'm always, you know, challenging his logic, you know, for whatever reason. But you know, I just think that because of how this system is, and you know, and we definitely should do another program specifically to focus on the economic piece as far as economics mistreatment and just sort of how, you know, we've been set up to do this, and it feels very normal, you know, and you know the way you're thinking, well, I have to eat, you know, and I don't even know if it's subconscious in a sense where you see an opportunity. And maybe the opportunity to say, you know what, blacks don't have this, blacks don't have that. Let me get into this and call it, you know, African something or whatever they're going to do. And then, you know, people feel like they're doing something for the community. And, you know, and then you really look at the situation, you know, and you find out that this person really is just trying to get money. And I don't know, have we developed any defense mechanisms against that? You know, I think the church is a huge exploitation. Really, it's a racket. And I feel like it's not the only one, but I do feel like that may be one of the first ones. And it has conditioned us to think that taking advantage of people is okay as long as you think you're doing a good thing. And the word good, which I don't want to get into that, but, you know, we have a general definition of what it means to be good, but the word good, and I think, you know, the word good and using that word to say that should somehow cleanse, in a sense, what I'm doing to people. Well, I'm doing something good for them, so, you know, even though they don't have anything, I want to take whatever they got because at least I'm giving them some good information. We got people here, you know, all over the world, you know, hustling online, selling whatever they're selling, and you're thinking to yourself, well, is anyone benefiting? You know, are we, you know, if you're selling wealth, or if you're selling what you're selling, and I should get something out of it, am I really getting something out of it? Are we really, you know, do we really sit down? The people who know better are really sitting down, you know, going after the people. Like, hey, you can't, you know, we can't keep you. You can't continue to run this game, you know. And we know better, and you're still running this game on people who we know don't really understand what's going on. Who we know has limited information. I don't know. I'm kind of repeating myself, but it just seems like we're not. I'm not sure there's anyone out there that's willing to kind of take that challenge on. So I'm putting it out there, and hopefully someone listens to the program and really starts to. In a sense, you know, I think about, you know, what we would call sacrifice or sacrificing, and it's going to require some of that. You know, it's going to require us to do some sacrificing and not necessarily chase the dollar and somehow pretending that's what you're not doing, right? So, anyway, I know we're probably getting close to the end of the program.
Right on. So, thank you for summing up your thoughts, and so this has been the Code Breakers, and I am D.
This is Paradox.
That's it.
And until next time, peace.